Wouldn't it be great to have your own small business, right? And when you have that small business, don't you need that support of a big business? Well, let Verizon help champion your small business dream, whether you own a small business or you're scaling one, or maybe even just starting one from scratch. You need Verizon Small Business Days. That's right. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. Paul, what does that mean? It means you can receive a free tech check with one-on-one meetings with a Verizon business expert. Plus, they'll give you personalized advice, solutions that are specific to your small business needs. And you know why? Because Verizon has your back. So don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. Mixed with blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar for the perfect balance of sweet, salty, and sour every time. Discover legendary taste with Cayman Jack, America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Find out what Dave Marshak from Ski School is up to now, and if Grand Crew exists in the same universe as Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Plus, we'll find out why there was a no dolly shots before noon rule on Ski School. All this and more on today's Last Looks. Hit the theme!
Last Looks!
Hello, my Section 8 ski students. I'm your ski instructor and party enthusiast, Paul Scheer, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? Last Looks, as I will take you on a journey up to the tip of Mount Party, and you will get to voice your issues on Ski School. Plus, Jason and I will chat with our pals, Carl Tart, put your T's in chat for Carl, and Phil Augusta Jackson about the new season of their hilarious NBC sitcom, Grand Crew. If you're not watching, people, you're missing out, but we have a great conversation also about music in that little just chat segment. So stay tuned for that. Plus, we are going to reveal next week's movie as well. But first things first, a big shout out to Sean Fogel. Sean, killing it with that theme. I loved it. And we want more themes from Sean, maybe even from you. If you have a theme, send it to us at howdidthisgetmade@earwolf.com. That's howdidthisgetmade@earwolf.com. Keep them short, 15, 20 seconds. That's best. All right, let's get into it. Last week, we talked at length about Ski School, and now you get a chance to get on your soapbox. I don't know. Anyway, it's time for corrections and omissions.
For all the things we talked about, there were things we did leave out. So now it's time for corrections and omissions.
Thank you, Dornheim, for that great theme. Let's go right to the Discord. Screaming Joe Blade. Okay, this is a great one. Screaming Joe Blade writes, this episode gave me flashbacks to my first couple of jobs in the Toronto film industry when I worked with both the director and DP of this film. I remember the DP talking about Ski School. Apparently, the grip department enjoyed the party scene in Whistler a lot, and they were often in such bad shape in the morning that they had a strict no dolly shots before noon. Two other great memories working on these films were having to push a character's picture vehicle into the shot as he pretended to drive up because the car didn't run. Great. And having to pay most of my deals in cash because the production company had a bad reputation for running out of money and checks bouncing. It's a great introduction to filmmaking. You know what? Screaming Joe Blade, I did not expect us to have this kind of an inside scoop, and I love every single detail. No dolly shots before noon. Amazing. Johnny Unusual writes, our heroes being in Section 8 is actually a gag. The term Section 8 is a U.S. military discharge term for those deemed mentally unfit for service. In a much less savory aspect of history, crossdressers and LGBTQ people used to be placed in this category too. In the TV show MASH, Corporal Klinger started crossdressing in an attempt to be given a Section 8 discharge. You see, I knew that sounded familiar. Thank you for bringing that to my attention, Johnny Unusual. Corgi Herder actually has a little bit of an addendum to that, though, because there's actually a real Section 8 snow sport institute in Canada where you can become a ski instructor. Their website doesn't mention visible breasts, but they do advertise a laid-back island lifestyle with ridiculous amounts of powder. The founder, by the way, Toby Leopaki, learned to ski at Whistler, where a lot of ski school was filmed. So, Corgi, are you saying that maybe this is a true story? This is a biopic? I mean, Scott, our producer, chimes in and says their website also mentions their founder did, in fact, name the business Section 8 Snowsport as a nod to ski school, which was his favorite movie as a teenager. So, party on, Tobin. I love that ski school has really taken over in this big way that I was not aware of. There's a whole episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia that is basically a ski school sequel or a redo. I have to watch that one as well. Dr. Guts 1003 writes, the announcer frequently refers to the competition in the first few days as being a qualifying event, yet the results don't seem to matter at all as all the sections are still competing at the end of the movie. If you're making the effort to have the announcer mention qualifying rounds, why not have that be the obstacle that prevents Section 8 from participating in the end? They could fail to qualify due to excessive partying or more Section 1 grappling hook shenanigans. Using Gene Wormer wannabe kick Section 8 out seemed like a lazy, half-hearted attempt at creating conflict. Wow. Well, Dr. Guts 1003, you think that this movie was lazy? You think that they didn't think it all through? But by the way, what you're presenting here is basically an obstacle that could not be overcome. Like, if they are disqualified, they could not get into it. Like, this idea of like wanting to kick them out at least keeps them in the mix. Like, you're just creating something that would take away the final ending. I'm not saying that I like the Dean Wormer ending, but at least it gives us a reason for the ending. You just want to cut it. You want the Richies to win, Dr. Guts? Is that what I'm getting? Anyway, let's go to the phones. Stephanie from New Jersey, what do you got?
Hi, Paul. This is Stephanie from New Jersey. Just calling about ski school and I was a little upset by the fact that you guys said ski school doesn't exist, because in the 90s, as a kid, my parents would send me away over Christmas break for like 10 days to a ski school, and it was pretty wild. I was a younger kid, so like it wasn't, you know, chainsaw wild. But then on top of that, I went on and became a ski instructor, and we definitely also have schools for ski instructors, and those were a little bit more wild. More on chainsaw level, and there were girls, and they did ski, and they did talk. They weren't just in bikinis. So there you have it. All sorts of ski school for ski people. Okay, that's it. Bye.
Whoa, breaking news. Stephanie laying it down. Ski school does exist, and ski instructor school exists as well. And there is a lot of partying. Again, another check in the column that this is a biopic. This is gritty. This is real. This should have been nominated for awards. See, people just took it for granted. They believed that the story was so fantastical that it couldn't have been real, the same way that Avatar has been received. People don't believe that that is actually happening. I have the proof. Follow me on my InfoWars spinoff show, where I talk about the truth about Pandora and the Takloon, which is that giant whale. Anyway, I'll get into it on that show. Kit from Los Angeles, what do you got?
So there's a scene where after they're hooking up the camera to all the TVs in the club, they're going to film the guys supposedly having sex. And one of the guys is like, all right, hey, I'm having trouble with this. Do you have the user manual? And he sets the manual on fire and hands it to him. And for whatever reason. And the guy's like just constantly like is just reading it in earnest, trying to like figure it out before it like burns up. I just thought that scene was absolutely insane, of, you know, in a film full of insane scenes. That's all.
Kit, I appreciate you just taking a moment to just get in on the small level. Just be like, this is insane. And you know what? You're right. In a movie of insane things, that is, like, when you think about it fully, one of the most insane things. Not the, obviously. I think the grappling hook is very much up there. But yes, I appreciate you just taking a moment to step back and appreciate the finer absurdity of this movie. And finally, Chrissy from Dallas, what do you got?
Oh, hi, Paul. This is Chrissy in Dallas. I am calling because I was on IMDb and I saw that the beautiful Victoria from this week's movie Ski School also played Jen's mom in Dancing It's On. That was her last credited role. I just thought that was very funny. And to see her as a skinny adult star. So thanks so much. Enjoy your Oscars night. Bye.
Whoa! Way to go, Chrissy. Get on that IMDb, and I mean that sincerely. None of us picked that up. Now I got to look at a side-by-side. Man, oh man, way to go, Chrissy. I think you're in the mix now, Chrissy. I think you're in the mix for winner of the week because you did the research. Okay, let's go back to the Discord. Catfish writes, I did not realize until I listened to the episode, but this movie ends with a giant plot twist. At the very beginning of the movie, Marshak says, you're too late to read. I've already put in a motion and elaborate plan, a series of events diabolically designed to get rid of this mountain and you and your satanic presence forever. And in fact, he had. He'd already somehow brokered the deal for the model/millionaire to purchase a mountain and rebrand it as Party Mountain. Since he already has an in with the future owner, he knows that nothing said nor done by Reed or the current owner matters at all. While watching the movie unfold, you think Marshak's aloof, devil-may-care attitude is just his anti-authority personality, when in fact, he is just basking in his victory for the entire running time, way ahead of everyone else. Catfish, I'm right there with you. I knew it. I saw it. This movie is like another award-winning film, The Usual Suspects, where everything changes at the end. And again, why wasn't it nominated? As Jason said, could this be nominated this year retroactively? I think we should be giving out Oscars to films that the Academy missed, and that would have been a perfect opportunity this year to start it with Ski School. Sean and Risa, chiming in together, writes, we were really surprised that no one brought up the third episode of season 11 of Always Sunny in Philadelphia titled The Gang Hits the Slopes. It serves as a parody to Ski School and is a hilarious companion to this movie for anyone wanting to know what happens to Dave Marshak when he hits middle age. In this episode, Dean Cameron plays the same character who is an older party animal skier leading a ragtag team against a corrupt businessman and his preppy douche pro skier henchmen who are trying to buy the mountain. Which mountain is he trying to buy? Oh, a little ski mountain called Party Mountain. I love it. You know, I want to play a clip of this because one of the things we were talking about is the announcer in Ski School and how the announcer really was laying down a lot of plot. And here's a little clip from Always Sunny where Charlie Day even jokes about this announcer and how he knows so much about everything on the mountain. Take a listen.
Last day to squeeze in some turns before tomorrow's big race. On a side note, it's good to see Frank Reynolds back on the hill. We'll see if he can patch things up with old rival Dave Drisco, but I wouldn't count on it.
Yo, hey, Dennis, did you just hear that?
What?
That PA announcement. What was that?
Well, there's a lot of people on this mountain, Charlie. Everybody's got to stay informed.
Yeah, but that guy was like saying a bunch of like really personal information about us. Like, how does he know that?
That's how it works.
But why is he talking about us? There's like hundreds of people out here.
Well, we're the most important thing that's happening right now.
Oh, I love it. So funny. Now I need to know what happened to Dave Marshak. I'm going to watch that right now. So many great corrections and omissions this week, but there can only be one that is the best. And this week, it has to go to, and I think you all know where I'm going. It's got to go to Screamin' Joe Blade, who gave us the best piece of information that we've ever gotten about a film, which is no dolly shots before noon. Now, I wish I could give you something, Screamin' Joe Blade, but I can't. I can only give you this amazing song that was written for you by Honest Jams. Hit it! Okay, if you want to chime in with your own thoughts about the latest episode, hit up the Discord at discord.gg/hdtgm or call me at 619 Paul Asked. That's 619-PAULASK. Our Discord is also currently taking ideas for squares on a How Did This Get Made bingo card that you can play while listening to each episode. So if you have any ideas for common scenarios, phrases, or tropes from the show, submit your ideas at tinyurl.com/HDTGM bingo. That's tinyurl.com/HDTGM bingo. Coming up next, Jason and I are joined by Carl Tart and Phil Augusta Jackson to talk about season 2 of NBC's Grand Crew and a lot more stuff. Stick around. Here's the thing, people. Walmart Plus is the membership that saves you time and money on the stuff you'd expect, but also on the stuff you don't. Let me explain. Did you know with your Walmart Plus membership, you can save money on gas? Yeah, save gas while you drive the kiddos to soccer practice, plus visit your in-laws, plus venture into the wilderness, plus wherever you want to go. Because Walmart Plus also saves you time and money with free delivery, perfect for ordering new remote batteries or coffee when somebody finishes it without telling you. And then, you know, eat all your snacks that you have stored in the back of that pantry for movie night. How dare they? Plus, you can actually even save on the actual movies with a Paramount Plus subscription. Stream Top Gun Maverick, plus Mean Girls, plus Jack Reacher, plus so much more, because savings is what this whole Walmart Plus membership is all about anyways. Members save on gas, plus free delivery, plus Paramount Plus, plus so much more. Start a free 30-day trial at www.walmartplus.com. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions. $35 order minimum. Paramount Plus Essential plan only. Separate registration required. I recently went to the Telluride Comedy Festival, and I was sick and tired of staying in the same kind of cookie-cutter places, and I went on Airbnb, and I found a perfect spot for me and the family. We had an amazing time because we felt like home. Then I realized, wait a second, what if I could give that feeling to someone else? Yes, that's the best part. When you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. That's right. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who have never thought about it or didn't even realize that their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle, and you can make someone feel great and make a little bit of money too, because we all need a little bit of money. And maybe your talent or your gift to the world is having a killer place. So if you have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Welcome back. You've likely noticed that on the How Did This Get Made feed every Monday, we have been pulling old episodes of How Did This Get Made out of the vault and re-releasing them back into the rotation. This week's Matinee Monday was Abraxas, Guardian of the Universe, which was directed by Damian Lee, who also directed Ski School. And next week's Matinee Monday will be Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which shares a director with next week's film, which I'll reveal at the end of this episode. Ooh, exciting, isn't it? All right, before we get to all of that, I am excited to sit down today and chat with Phil Augusta Jackson and Carl Tart. Jason and I, we improvise with these guys. They're incredibly talented. Phil Augusta Jackson is an improviser and musician. He is a writer. He wrote on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he wrote on Key & Peele, and he has created Grand Crew. Carl Tart, one of the funniest guys out there. Love performing with him. He's popped up in shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He is a lead, obviously, on Grand Crew, and he is a regular on Comedy Bang Bang, and he comes on to my Twitch show with Rob Hubel a lot. Just a great guy, and these are two great guys talking about their show and what they're up to. But before we get into that, take a little listen to Grand Crew.
Hey, Sherm, you see that girl back there?
The girl at the jukebox? Oh, yeah, she's cute.
All right, so I'm coming back from the bathroom. I hear her going on and on and on about boxing. I figure you go over there, talk to her about boxing, you probably have a shot.
Ooh, that's what I'm talking about, Nikki. Thanks for looking out. Now, y'all prepare to watch a master
at work.
Get it? Get it? I made all of that up. This is a prank. She wasn't talking about boxing.
Amazing.
Oh, this is going to be a disaster, and I love it.
Oh, let's start.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
This is even better than I thought it would be. Oh. He's actually pretending to box.
I don't understand. Look, did he tell her that he's a boxer?
Wow.
Good little combo.
Oh, he took a shot?
It was kind of a sticking move.
Okay, he's doing the Matrix.
Yeah, he's like,
she don't like it. Oh, she didn't like it. She's telling him something.
She's telling him to leave.
She's saying, I don't like violence.
Oh, no.
Oh, we got him good.
That could not have gone better. We're headed back to her place. Thank you, Nikki.
Please welcome Phil, Augusta Jackson, and Carl Tart. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having
us.
You guys are getting hoarse voice subdued.
Sorry, yeah.
You guys are in like the after dark of this show. Like this Shear's doing his like sexy Forsythia, the Lennon Parham character.
Let me get a cigarette out for that.
I know it's smoky. Yeah, I like
Paul,
it.
These are the same cigarettes from Robin Paul.
I haven't
in
had
2020.
Wait, Carl, I did not expect you to just actually pull out a cigarette.
Really?
Yes.
Carl really put a cigarette in his mouth. I love this.
And these cigarettes, like I said, are 2 years old. These are like middle of the pandemic, a bit that I did on Robin Paul.
Yes, I remember
that's funny.
I went to the store and bought a pack of cigarettes.
That's great.
And they're still full because I don't smoke.
My wife, June, who's on How Did This Get Made with us, when we go to a party, she can get a cigarette going very quickly. I don't know. We never buys a pack, but every party, I'll see her in the corner smoking with somebody, some stranger, getting a little cigarette action on. Like, I feel like I know that she's having a good time if a cigarette is out and happening. Like, it just feels like that is really like, and it's becoming less and less of a thing where you can find a lot of people.
I couldn't tell you the last time I smoked a cigarette. And I mean,
oh my gosh,
genuinely 30 years ago?
It's a rough flavor. It's like, it's too intense for me. When I, like one time on this show, Black Monday, we were doing, we had to smoke all the time. And in the pilot, we were like, all right, just light us another cigarette, light another cigarette. And that was those like fake cigarettes. Yeah. And I would breathe into my pillow and it would get this like, what I was breathing back at myself was so disgusting. I was like, oh, this must be a million times worse if you are actual smoker.
The amount of fake drugs that I've had to take at some point is going to give me a worse cancer than if I had actually smoked cigarettes or, you know, like the fake stuff they give you to snort. All the fake stuff is terrible.
Well, that's what I was going
to
ask. Have you've done fake cocaine?
Yeah.
What? Oh, yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, what is it? Because it looks
nuts.
Like it's nuts.
Nuts. And then there's like a lactose one. I think that's
the one that I had at something that recently I had to like bury my nose in and take up. And it was like, ooh. I was getting so much. On
it
Brooklyn, we
down.
Did it.
Yeah,
oh, too.
I remember,
on Brooklyn, we
I remember,
did it. Yeah.
Because I couldn't remember. That's what made me think of it. Because I couldn't remember if we actually showed Pimento doing the cocaine or if we dipped you out of frame. But like,
I go down, but I do still get it.
That's crazy.
Oh, man. Well, like, this is interesting because Grand Cru obviously takes place in this wine bar. Mm-hmm. And you all are drinking wine all the time. And I think that's what people don't know, too. Like, what is that? Like, because when we used to drink beer on the league, it would be very, like, just get disgusting after a while. What is the flavor palette that you're getting on the wine that is in Grand Cru?
So some people drink flavored water. I think Nicole drinks a flavored water. Justin drinks a flavored water. Aaron drinks fake wine, which is disgusting. They have poured me some. It's very bad. It just tastes like vinegar juice. I don't know how he does it, but you know, he's real one of those real actory types. and I drink Diet Cran Grape, Ocean Spray.
Okay, that's what they used to give us for wine on the league too, which is too sweet.
It's
like
very
when you
sweet
do
multiple takes.
Multiple takes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I do diet. I personally would love the real deal, but
just drinking wine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, not
oh,
just
no,
drinking
no.
Wine,
like, real grape cocktail. Yeah.
But I would gain 25 pounds throughout the course of the season if I drink real cream.
Oh, man. Because we used to have that thing too. Like, whenever you do a show, I think set in a bar, like, you also have like, it's a high class, but it's a wine bar. Mm-hmm. So there's more things around. Like, even on the league, we just have a tray of like mixed nuts and you're eating that all day too. And like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I've eaten like 10 bowls of this, or I've like dipped into the food too much. And you just go home feeling disgusting at the end of the day.
They push charcuterie out for us, and I will find something that I want to eat, and I'll talk to the prop lady and be like, hey, how many grapes do you have? Because I also am, and this is a secret, but it's not a secret. I'm sure other actors do the same thing. But I heard when I watched Ocean's 11, I think when I was like 12 years old, when it first came out, that Brad Pitt is always eating
his
scenes.
It's the shrimp cocktail in Ocean's. Yeah.
And so I'm now like, if I have the option to be eating something. I also think it's always funny.
Yeah.
So like it's a choice that I'm glad I get to make on the show. But like if we're ever like at a party, like I want a big bowl of chips. Yeah. I want and I'm not really I maybe eat five because of continuity. But right. like I want to be having that. To me, that's all, whenever anybody is eating something, when like Maxine Shaw on Living Single would always be eating when she came into the room. Cole on Martin would always be eating when he came into the room. I think Joey would mm-hmm. be eating a lot on Friends when like, so like that's food is always funny to me. Like just people working with
I'm
food.
So, yeah. Oh, I go ahead.
I was just going to say as the person who sits in the edit bay and edits the show, I was wondering how intentional it is, because I definitely noticed and I love it. it's like there's cereal, there's chips. He's always working with something. It is always funny. And it's always great.
There's something great about having a prop. I agree. On the league, it was just a one-off joke in one of the episodes that it would be funny if my character just pulled food out of his pocket. And I was like, oh, it'd be funny if it was a hot dog. Can you guys make a hot dog? And I'll just pull a fully cooked hot dog in a bun, like ready to go out of my pocket. And that became a joke that then recurred so often that there would be days where I would have to eat like 10 hot dogs.
Oh, shit.
Because we would do these long improv takes. And because they were these long improv takes, I'd eat 2/3 of a hot dog in the 3 minutes it took us
and
to improv
spit it
the
out
scene.
Because you have to swallow it in the scene.
Yeah. And so I would eat, and it was disgusting, you know, to your point, Carl, about if you drank the full, you know, cranberry juice or whatever, it was like I would have so much sodium, so much salt from the hot dogs in my system those days. It would be disgusting.
That's really
well,
funny.
I got to talk about this show a little bit because, you know, Phil, I know you as a performer. And when we first started performing together, you were working on Brooklyn Nine-Nine as a writer and you got this show. And this show, and talking to Carl about this show, what I love about it is it really comes from this place of like, it is your life. These are a majority of people in this cast are your Absolutely. Friends. And so just talk me through like how you got this idea for the show and what you wanted to do. Cause I feel like for people who have not seen Grand Cru, kind of set the table for
Absolutely.
Us a little bit.
So I was working on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I wrote on Brooklyn Nine-Nine seasons 3, 4, 5, and 6. Right in the middle of that time, the creator of that show, Dan Gore, was like, hey, we have a good working dynamic. If you ever want to develop something, let me know. And you know, I'm all about working with folks. I'm all about collaboration. I just love it so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the improviser in all of us. Everybody in this room right now, it's like, oh shit, you fuck with what I'm fucking with. Like, let's try and make some shit happen. And we started meeting weekly while the room was up, and we were just tossing around some random ideas, like, you know, what if a dentist can't be a dentist anymore and he's got to figure out his life, or a group of people get stuck in an arc, like crazy high premise stuff. Right. Like what has a hook to
it? Wait, what else? I want to know about the dentist.
Maybe I'll still do this dentist thing. You know, it's got legs.
Carl's like, wait, that's the role I want. I want the dentist who's not a dentist anymore.
Yeah.
Make that a storyline for Carl's character on the show.
That we could do it. I mean, Carl's character is the one that hops around career-wise.
It would be funny if it's revealed that Carl's character, you know, I feel like this season, Carl's character is an Uber driver. If it's revealed that he can be a practicing dentist, he just isn't.
Yes, that's amazing. I mean, the beauty of it is his character is a genius. So he can be good at anything immediately, much like the real Carl Tarr. So it's like, that's the thing on the table. Like Carl keeps pitching me that Sherm becomes a weatherman. I'm like, it's funny.
Oh, I love that.
It's funny.
You got to wait until like season 6 so you can spin that
exactly.
off. And it's
I
like,
love
good
that
morning,
every four
good morning,
or five
Miami.
Episodes, Carl just has a different full-blown career.
Different career. but we, you know, and so, but before we start these meetings, Dan would be like, oh, so what's going on in your life? Like, you know, he's got like a family. So his life is just very like different than mine is.
Right.
And I just be like, oh, I hang out with the homies at this bar called Covell. And, you know, we just talk about our lives, our dating lives, career and blah, 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 blah. And then after like a couple weeks, I think it was Dan that was like, I think that might be the show. And I was like, yeah, I think, you know, they say that cliche. It's like, write what you know. And that's how it happened. So it was like us trying to come up with like very clever ideas, but starting our days talking about just the things that were going on in my life. And then this wine bar became a very obvious kind of tapestry to create the show. And then the rest is just a bunch of, you know, putting the
pitch the doc together.
But now, Carl, mm-hmm. you come in, you know Phil, you know Nicole, you have to audition for this. And we all have to audition for stuff, right? Especially yeah. this is an NBC show.
Yeah.
Like, where are you at when you come into it?
So we were hanging out and we would be at Covell through every step of
right.
when he said, we're about to pitch the show. We got a full deck. We got this. We got that. We're about to go in tomorrow. We sold the show in the room. We did it. And at that moment, I'm just a supportive friend. Yeah. Like, now I know what the show is about. I know that. I know I'm probably going to audition for it. Like, this is the realest,
right.
honest to God truth. But I, like, at that moment, I'm just being a supportive friend, just happy for my homeboy that he has sold the show. He's about to be a showrunner, like, to a major network. That's dope. I'm in the Keenan room at the time, and that's when the audition process starts. So I auditioned the first time, and the first time I was prepared for Phil to be in the room, but our other friend Tim Chang was also in the room, and I kind of was like, man, get your ass out of here.
Because Tim was my assistant at the time for the whole
party. Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, I didn't know he was going to be here, too. Get out of here. And I think he did leave. and then had to go back like the next day. But again, that was just another job for me. Didn't go in there. Of course, I'm not going to go in there and act like I don't know who Phil is.
Right.
But like, I'm here to do a job. So I'm going to try to be good at that job. And I auditioned for two characters that day. And so I was, you know, wanted to be. And, you know, did I? And this is any casting directors listening to this. I'm sorry. But this job, I probably prepared for a little bit more, you know.
Yeah.
Like, then I normally
now, is that because you wanted to do right by Phil or because yes. you really wanted it? Yeah, and or both.
I didn't know both. It's both of those.
Yeah.
One, I didn't know what Phil had said to them about right. me. So I didn't want to go in there and mess up. And I, to be honest, I had another situation that was like this where I went in to audition for the My Player character on NBA 2K19 or 20 and was like, man, it's a video game. I'm just finna. And the script was like weird. And I was like, nah, I'm finna go in here and read out the script. It'll be fine. And I walk into the room and our good buddy, Aaron Covington, who also wrote Creed, is the person who wrote the copy. And I
oh, wow.
I bombed it.
When you bomb an audition, it sucks. But when you bomb an audition in front of a friend who has like vouched for you or who has brought you in, then you feel just absolutely horrible.
I felt horrible to where I apologized to him. I was like, hey, man, I don't know if you talked me up to the people or anything like that, but I'm sorry, man. I did not know you was going to be in there. And to be honest, when I saw NBA 2K, I was like, man, what is this? Like, what?
Right.
I got other things to do.
It's not like you play NBA 2K and go like, wow, the acting on that My Player.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't know what the hell was going to happen. I didn't know how deep they were going to start getting.
Right.
This was probably like one of the first ones where they really went deep into the storyline. They had all these cutscenes and everything. So I didn't know what that was going to be. So I did not prepare well for that one. So this time going in, knowing that I really wanted to do the show, knowing that I was going to go in and be seen in front of a friend, I really prepared for it. And I had both character lines memorized and everything. And I like really did the work and wanted to do a good job. And then they called me back the second time and I went back in, had to do the same thing again. I figured that now that I seen Tim Chang in there, I feel like there was going to be more people in the room that I was going to know. So just being prepared for that. And Phil, probably Dan, who I also worked for. And like, I didn't know, I was just preparing for myself for everything. And so went back and then they called me back for the chemistry reads. And then Phil called me and told me that I had gotten the part. And it was, you know, kind of surreal in that moment. And it still felt like it was amazing. But then, you know, those thoughts, those intrusive thoughts get into your head. Like, man, now everybody's going to think that I just got this because Phil's my friend. They don't know the process that I just went through. They don't know how, you know, like they don't. That's just what we do as people who care. And like, I was extremely grateful and am still extremely grateful for it. And for this to be my first long-term job, I couldn't ask for a better one. For the fact that we do all know each other and are like, because you know you guys know how it is, like being in that UCB green room where the person that's booked the job comes in and they're complaining about it a little bit and everybody's like, man, fuck you, man, we got to drink these free Bud Lights out of this fridge because we can't afford drinks at the bar next door. I don't give a shit that you're having a horrible time on your TV show. Kiss my ass.
There is something to be said for, you know, what you're talking about, which is, you know, what you guys have is an ensemble based comedy show that mm-hmm. is majority your peer group, your friend group, yeah. the people that you, I'm assuming, love working with and are able to elevate in a way that is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Like yeah. Your individual dynamics are come through so hard. The fact that you guys all know each other and are vibing off of each other and are riffing off of each other, that is so much, it's baked into the ensemble nature of this show, which makes it feel so much funnier than just a sitcom that's set up at a bar or whatever. There's something yeah. about this friend group being based on your actual friends and having all of you guys there. It's pretty fantastic. Like you riffing with Nicole, and right now, like Nicole and Colton as a couple, like there's stuff in this show that is just absolutely hilarious.
And then there's just stuff that I think, like I wrote you, Carl, last year, like in season one, I don't remember which episode it was, but you're wearing an all white outfit yeah. and one 105. The opening moment of that is like the wine, like tap. It's like a beer, you know, that like kind of breaks and you just get soaked in this. Yeah. I laughed so hard at that. Like, and there's some big moments like that. I feel like the sleepover episode, like I think that's 103. Like, yeah, like there's like, so you can do this like big, I don't know, big fun comedy stuff, but then it's also like based in these characters. I just love the relationship between these characters, and you can kind of go between both of these.
Oh yeah, it's got like real heart, but it's also absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
sick.
I mean, yeah, we want hard laughs. That's the goal. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Also, I will say with that cold open with the wearing white, I mean, a version of that. I mean, the show is just a heightened version of the stuff that we go through. Some of it is, you know, just pulled from the headlines of stuff we've gone through. And some of it's like, oh, interesting conversations we had that we get to make stories out of. But I definitely spilled wine all over Carl. All over Carl at is it called The Study? The place that's next to Public House.
Public House.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, Carl. We were all out one night. You were wearing a really dope outfit. And then I think we had switched locations to that bar, and I ordered like a cab sauv, and I spilled it like all over your outfit. And you were like, and you were so, I mean, what are you going to do? It's like, you're obviously you're a little like, oh, well, I wish that didn't happen. But it's like, we're homies. So you're like, all right. Yeah, no, it's cool. I think much like the cold open, you were like, yeah, I think I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
it makes me laugh so hard because I feel like it is like, this is like a fun, I mean, again, it's a fun friend group, but then I also feel like there's this other element that I feel like other shows really haven't captured, which is this wine culture stuff as well.
Well, there's wine conversations in the show, you know, like akin to Sideways. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like where you guys are seem to be interested in talking about the, not just as a setting, but talking about the wine that's
absolutely
happening.
I mean, yeah, I think you know, and Carl can speak to this too, but like, I think the goal is to track it over how our relationship with wine has evolved in real life. So like when we first started going to Covell, we didn't really know anything. And so we're asking a lot of questions and, you know, it's coming a little bit more from a place of kind of being new to the terrain. And then the idea in season two is to make it kind of imbue it a little bit more seamlessly, because the more time you spend at this place, the more you get to know what you like and things of that nature. And so that's right. That was the thought behind, you know, how we're treating it. But it's been really nice to see people that are wine enthusiasts really gravitate towards the show as well.
Do you have like a hospital dramas will have like a medical expert on set? Do you have like a wine
sommelier?
Yeah, you do.
Devin Reed. Amazing. He's awesome.
I love that. And Carl, like, were you a wine drinker? I mean, you were with this crew before that. Like, are you still a wine drinker? Like, something I feel like I can't quite put my palate on. Like, Jason, you've introduced me to good wines. I like drinking, but I feel like I don't have enough adventurous people. June will only drink one wine, which is called butter. You can guess what that tastes like.
Chardonnay.
It's a white
it's a
wine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
yeah, a yeah, Chardonnay. Chard, yeah. Yeah. And, but I can't drink that. It won't, like, it does, it's fine. It's not my go-to.
Great so to
like,
cook.
For me, I'll open up a bottle of red, but I don't know how to keep it. My friend just gave me like this, like decanter that I put in there, and it basically like, it aerates. So it's like, you oh my gosh, I feel like I want to call
and
it
white at the bottom, yeah, very like narrow.
It's like you put that I have a decanter. This is like I put a plug in the top of it, and then I put like a little machine, a little device in it that's battery powered and has like
I think this is a dildo. I might be talking about a dildo.
And then like and it's like it vibrates. Yeah.
Sticks to the wall of the bathtub.
But it keeps wine fresh. So now I'm able to, I forget what it is called, but it's like
a regular, like just corking it back would just, you have to drink it within like 2 or 3 days. I think I've heard that this, you can have it for longer than that.
I've got a couple of different versions of this, and they give you a couple of extra days basically, but not too much more.
I'm right with you there, Paul, when it comes to wine drinking. So the pilot episode last season, when we walk in and I'm like, okay, I want to turn up. Like, I'm not trying to, what is this? That really happened. One night, Phil had the night that we started going to Covell, Phil had a meeting there. And he was like, yo, just meet me. It was a Saturday night. So we were about to go out, you know, get on the town. And Phil was like, meet me at this spot. And I'm like, cool. And I walk up to the bar. I'm like, yeah, let me get a whiskey Coke. And they're like, we don't do that here. And I'm like, what the hell are we doing here?
Because this is a proper just like wine and beer bar.
Yeah.
And the beer is not going to be like anything that you reckon. It's going to be a small brew. It's going to be, they have four different ciders. Yeah.
And I don't be wanting beer. You know what I mean? Like, I'm already, like, I'd rather have my carbs elsewhere. Like, I'd rather go to Subway. I'd rather go to Jersey Mike's. I don't want to drink my Jersey Mike's. And so, but then once we got into it and started learning about it and being able to talk it and stuff like that, then it got a lot easier to deal with. And I also do have a lot of wine here because we've all gone up the coast and joined clubs and they send the wine. And then you got to be like, hey, can you cancel this? Because I'm not drinking this wine as fast as you're sending it.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you go and visit any winery, you're like, I'm going to drink this every day. And then all of a sudden, like two cases later, like, oh, shit, I got to. Yeah.
And I have so much. And the only time I open it up is, you know, I don't drink at home, really.
Right.
And so I have wasted quite a few bottles when I open them and then leave them on the counter or put them in the fridge. And then 3 weeks goes by. I'm like, I can't drink this. This is bad.
Yeah.
So I've gotten 2 glasses out of it. If I'm, you know, entertaining a Mademoiselle or something like that. French woman. A lot of French ladies in my neighborhood. But I'll get away.
If you're only going to give a French girl wine.
She doesn't want whiskey.
She can't. You have a bunch of croissants.
When I'm at home cooking, I want Cactus Cooler or something like that. I don't want wine. And so, but I do like it when we go out. And now that I can like talk it and really like, you know, identify. Like we have a mutual friend, shout out Cassandra, who works at the wine spot, and she'll like quiz me. She'll just pour up something and be like, okay, tell me what you tasting here.
Yeah.
And she's the best. And we have we'll sit there and I'll be able to, you know, identify notes and stuff now.
Guys, I know that the show obviously is every Friday night, but I want to talk to you about what you're all into. Phil, besides being a great writer, directing episodes this season as well, you also create music. And I love your music.
Including the theme song for Grand Cru.
Cabernet and Sauvignon team is here, but now it's on. Carry on and carry on, sipping on, carry on. Fine wine got notes like a cello. Pull up in a spot like hello. If you got me, then I got you. This is the vibe, this is the crew. Grand Cru, Grand Cru. Grand Cru, Grand Cru, Grand Cru. Grand Cru.
You can follow Phil on Spotify, but what are you listening to? What are you watching? Like, what are you into right now?
Right now, I'm trying to think what I've been listening to. I have been listening to any new albums I've been listening to. I've been listening to like old stuff.
That's good. Tell us. Yeah.
I listen to a lot. I love jazz. So I listen to a lot of Coltrane. I go on these walks and stuff like that. I feel like
there's a recently released Elvin Jones album that is like old live Elvin. It's incredible.
Absolutely. I'll check that out. I mean, that's been the vibe lately. Like Anita Baker, Carl put together a playlist of like old school jams to help me get inspired for this season of Grand Cru. And so I listen to that playlist when I'm walking sometimes.
Ooh, that's great. That's great. That's like, I love, because I do that too when I'm writing something. It's great that it came from Carl. I create a playlist that I feel like these are the songs from this script or this thing I'm putting together.
Just like inspo has been really fantastic. I just finished this book called Atomic Habits. That was pretty cool to like just to get inspired and just to get more efficient with life and shit like that.
I got to tell you a book that I think you'll read. I was going to tell Jason about this. I've been talking about this. Rick Rubin's book, The Creative Act. It is so good. It blew me away. Like there, every now and then I'll read a book.
I'll write that down.
That like you're talking about Atomic Habits, where you're like, oh, this changes a little bit of my perception of things. The Creative Act, A Way of Being, Rick Rubin. It just changed my way.
I've
about creativity, partnership, collaboration, and it's like, and it's not like he's not trying to sell you anything. Like it's not like
he doesn't need to. Like, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I felt about that documentary he did, Shangri-La. That was that's about his studio that was destroyed in the fires
and. Malibu, exactly.
And it's all about that studio and his process. And it's like five episodes. And it's very similar. It's all about the creative process and what his kind of purpose or what his point of view is inside of his job as a producer. And it's all to facilitate the creative process. That's his whole thing. To not get in the way, to get out of the way, and to help facilitate. Anyway, super interesting and a million like great insights from him, I thought, in that thing.
That's awesome.
It was so interesting. He was talking, he was, you can listen to him read it too, because he reads his own book on an Audible. So he's got a great voice. And but I listened to him on an interview show. I'm not a big Grateful Dead fan. Like that's not been something that I've ever, you know, I'm not against it, but I'm just not, you know, whatever. And he was talking about why they are so interesting. And they're like, why is that band? Like, why do people get behind it? And he was like, they're not perfect. And that's what's interesting. He was like, there are bands out there that are tighter, that are stronger, that are better. But when you're watching it, you feel like you're watching something that's wholly unique that can never really quite happen again. Yeah. Like you're a part of it. It has that jazz element, improv element. Yeah. It's interesting.
Well, that's what I was just going to say as improvisers, what people love, what fans are obsessed with about the Grateful Dead, like the Grateful Dead's studio albums are almost irrelevant to the fan base. Right. It is the interpretations of those songs that are performed live and how the band takes the inspiration from those original songs and turns them into these things that then are being interpreted for years and years and years. And so that's why fans of the Dead are so dedicated to, oh, my favorite version of that song is the live at the Fillmore this, or is this date here, or this song really didn't become what it was until they figured this part of
it out.
That's
so interesting. What types of changes are they doing live though? Are we talking
jams.
Like, they're jamming out.
It's all jams. Okay. It's all jams, and those jams then can inform a song that was recorded very slowly on an album becomes a much faster, like the whole song can change. Yeah. And this is the case for a lot of jazz albums as well.
Is Fish the same?
Fish is the same. You know,
but
Fish is the
like,
same.
Yeah, Fish is like, I feel like there's just something that's a little bit more elevated, I guess. But Trey Anastasio has like that same, like he's a genius. I don't know. Maybe the cultures.
No, it is. All those artists are about, similar again to what we do.
Yeah.
They are all about the live performance, the live experience, and that it's there for this night only or whatever. You know, like it is those albums. If you're going to listen to, you know, like Miles is never going to play, you know, Olio the way he did on the album. He's going to every show, every solo is a different interpretation of that
song. It's interesting to think about an album being like an outline. for the live performance, which is like not usually how I approach listening to music, but that's cool. I think that's really cool.
Now, Carl, you got a great podcast, Gossip Kings, where you're watching Gossip Girls. And by the way, I've told so many people about this podcast. It's hilarious. And I have people like young girls I know listen to this podcast because they are also watching Gossip Girls. Like they just happen to be watching it at the same time. I've recommended it. So it's become like a hit there. Like, so you got to listen to that. But what else are you up to? Like, what are you into like in listening to or watching or reading?
So I've always been like an old soul with music. My mom I got a young mom And so I listened to a lot of the music that she grew up listening to because she was still playing it because it's, you know, what she likes. But I also, one thing I noticed before we had streaming platforms, DSPs and stuff like that, was I would know all these artists, but only know one or two of their hits.
Yeah.
And so now that we have access to like their whole catalogs, I'll go back and listen to their albums and realize that some of them suck. And I'm like, man, they came out with like two good songs, but this album is trash. And so like, I don't want to put the artist out there, but I will say like, I've been, as far as new stuff goes, I'm still, Drake's and 21 Savage's album is still in heavy rotation for me. Of course, SZA's new album is still in heavy rotation for me. It's very, very good. I listen to the R&B Spotify playlist and find new artists to check out. And I also still play. I'm realizing that I'm becoming the old head that only plays music from when I first started driving.
Yeah.
And so my 2007 playlists are very in rotation right now, especially when I go back to like the area I grew up in, which is just, you know, the west side of LA. If I'm going to like check my mail or something, I go, let me turn on this. And I remember when I first used to turn down this street when I was a senior in high school or whatever. But watching wise, yeah, we've been XOXO Gossip Kings, the podcast. I am watching Gossip Girl in real time. One to two episodes a week. So don't spoil anything for me. Those people out there, if you do, I'll block you. And
how far in? Because this has been going on for years now. How far into this are you?
Season 4, episode 6.
Wow.
I think there are 6.
Oh, okay.
Seasons.
Okay, so you still have a ways to go.
Who's your favorite Gossip Girl?
Oh man, Paul, these people are so terrible. And watching this through the lens of a 33-year-old man, 33-year-old black man at that, this is an experience that I have no interest in. Like, and so I do like the show. I'm not going to say I don't like it, but I also hate it at the same time.
Sure.
But I don't have a favorite character because these are all the types of people who I've dealt with over the years, and I hate these type of people. So when people ask, well, who's your favorite character on the show? I go, Rufus, the dad. And everybody's like, why do you like him so? But he doesn't do anything. And I go, yeah, but he's the only normal, nice person. Like, everybody else is such a piece of shit. And so it's very hard. Rufus, the old, and Serena's little brother, Eric, is also like a normal person.
Rufus, the dad. guys, season 2 has started. You could start off if you wanted. Like season 2, we're coming back from a cliffhanger of season 1. Mm-hmm. Noah has proposed, but you're still, you could catch up. If you have Peacock, and you should have Peacock, they've got great stuff. You can catch up on Grand Crew whenever you want. It's open to you. Mm-hmm. But if you want to watch it live on NBC, and you should, that's on Friday nights, 8:30.
That's right.
8:30.
Friday's at 8:30.
And listen, if you've got Peacock, pull up Grand Crew and play the whole thing straight in a row.
Yeah, let it go.
Just autoplay the whole season. Make your way through it, but autoplay the whole season. Finish the show.
Yes, it makes a difference in our world now. It makes a difference.
It does.
Get on it.
It really does.
And also, it should be noted that I think everyone in this room has worked on Brooklyn Nine-Nine in some capacity.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
absolutely.
Now it has been established that Grand Crew exists in the Brooklyn Nine-Nine universe.
This is amazing.
Because
yes.
Because we had Will Hines on the show as his character from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Carl Kerm.
Incredible.
And so that's just the thing I wanted to say. And I was just very happy to
I
do that.
Will,
Will's my old
Listen,
roommate. You
also,
know, so.
Adrian Pimento on Grand Crew.
Ooh,
make it happen.
Yeah, my cybersecurity expert who loves charcuterie. We're talking about eating food on set. There was a bit that we cut out of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It was like me and Chelsea Pretty going at it. And I had to eat a whole like olive and then spit out the pit, but it was hard to
to
get
clean the olive. Yeah, that's
clean
not an
the
easy
olive
thing to
every
do.
Time. And they had to cut it for time. But Chelsea's like, that was like one of my favorite bits in the show that we could, this is not on the show because it just took too
my
long.
My character in, I played a delivery man who was really high, who got scared during a crime scene on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That delivery man did not have a name. Was his name Sherm?
Probably Sherm.
Yes.
Could have been Sherm. Sherm had a little stint in Brooklyn.
That would be pretty great.
I love
that.
This
would be pretty great. But yeah, whenever you need me, Pimento, absolutely.
Say less. Let's get
can,
it.
Can roll right through Greg Crew and cause a lot of
love
chaos.
This is so fun, guys. Watch Grand Crew. You will love it. And the cast is not just I just think it's one of the best casts on TV, too. We talked about Nicole Byer, who's a How Did This Get Made favorite. So watch her on the show. I think she's fantastic on this show. Echo Kellum is so great. Everybody. You've introduced me to people that I love, too. So Grand Crew, Peacock, NBC, do it up. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you so much. For being here with us. Appreciate y'all.
Thank you so much to Phil and Carl for chatting with me and Jason. And be sure to check out season 2 of Grand Crew, airing every Friday at 8:30 p.m. or stream it on Peacock. And to all you singer and songwriters out there, remember, we're always accepting new theme songs for Just Chat and other Last Look segments. So send them in at howdidthisgetmade@earwolf.com. Okay, now that we got ski school out of the way, let's talk about next week's film. We are going from a race in the snow to a chase for some dough. That's right. I love these transitions. We are watching the 2022 action flick Ambulance, directed by Michael Bay and starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Here's a short breakdown of the plot. Two brothers, one a career criminal, the other a decorated veteran, hijack an ambulance after a heist getaway that goes spectacularly wrong. Rotten Tomatoes gives this film a 68% score on the tomato meter, and Christy Lemire from KPCC in Los Angeles says, "Ambulance is so dumb, and I was so ashamed of myself for enjoying it as much as I did." Christy, I feel the same. Let's take a listen to the trailer.
32 million.
You're my brother. I will do anything for you.
Get down! Get down! Down!
I came to you for a loan, not this.
Stop!
What do you want?
Just gonna borrow it.
Bank robbery suspects have taken an ambulance.
We're doing hostages now.
Does your wife know you're up, banks?
I'm gonna get you back home, little brother. Ah! I'm gonna get everybody home.
Ambulance.
You can stream Ambulance for free on Amazon Prime Video or rent it on Apple TV, YouTube, or Google Play. I encourage you to also check out Hoopla or Canopy, which are digital media services offered by your local public library that allow you to consume movies, books, audiobooks, ebooks, comics, and TV shows for free. That is it, people. Please remember to rate and review the show. It helps. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, make sure you are following us. Visit us on social media at HDTGM for commercial-free access to How Did This Get Made and our entire archive and so, so much more. Sign up for Stitcher Premium for a free one-month trial using the code BONKERS, as B-O-N-K-E-R-S. And a big thank you to our producers, Scott, Sonny, Molly Reynolds, and our movie-picking producer, Avril Halley, our engineer, Alex Gonzalez, and our publisher, July Diaz. We will see you next week for Ambulance.